and standing shoulder to shoulder with the hardest working, bravest people that I know. CRMW.net. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Hope to have, as always, as we always think we do anyway, an informative and maybe a little bit of an educational and, oh, maybe even entertaining program today. You know, I make a list every day of things that I'd like to talk about. I just jot down a few things on the paper and make a little list and see what comes of it. And I think today I've got the shortest list I've ever had. I don't know why. I'm just in one of those moods today. Usually have a little bit of material setting here to go over during the day. Today, going to have to wing it. Going to have to, excuse me, going to have to count on your phone calls today. Or we'll be playing, well, feelings all day. Feelings. Da 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 da. Feeling. Yeah, I'll play that all day. I will. I'll play it all day. I'll do it. I swear I will. I hate that song. Maybe you don't. Maybe you'd love it if I played that all day instead of talking like I usually do. Anyway, do hope you will join us today. 866-546-5254. It's the day after West, by God, Virginia's massive victory for Hillary Clinton, 67 to 26%. Wow. And John Edwards got 7%. So I don't know what to make of that. I really do not know what to make of it. Is West Virginia representative of that whole beltway down through there, of Kentucky and Tennessee? And is that what's going to happen? I don't know. It should be interesting what's going to happen. But it's odd to me the way the primary, you know, it built up to such a crescendo a few weeks back. And ever since North Carolina and Pennsylvania, the whole thing's been kind of dying a slow, painful death, I think. So you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen here. Is it going to go all the way to the convention? Hillary certainly sounds like she's going to take it all the way to the convention. She's gotten me convinced. I don't know. You, politicians can turn on a dime, but I am convinced she's going to take it to the convention. And what happens? She gets there and doesn't have the votes, what if Obama doesn't have the votes and you have to go into a second round, and then Hillary gets up and pleads her case, and I don't know. I wish I knew what is going on inside the Clinton camp right now. I would love to know what's going on inside the Clinton camp. I just don't know. I hear all the pundits have, one observation after another, but I don't know. I don't even have a good bet what it is that's going on right now. I'm hearing behind the scenes that Obama has privately spoken to many of the uncommitted superdelegates, and they are pledging their loyalty to him, and that he may have enough right now. I just don't know what to think. I'm in a quandary over the whole thing. Well, anyway, 67-26 last night. That's a big butt kicking, that's for sure. Barack didn't even hardly acknowledge that there was a primary yesterday. I thought that was a little bit strange. But he was over in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, hometown of Mr. Rub Drug Junkie Limbaugh. Yes, hometown. Well. But it was a terrific day for the Democrats in the country. Hillary, of course, coasted to the victory, and we expected that. I didn't expect it to be as bad as it was. I maybe thought 25 points, something like that. They were lowering everybody's expectations, but to end up with 41-point victory, that's pretty wild. Very wild. And it might be her strongest region in the country. I don't know. But the biggest news, really, of yesterday's voting around the country came in Mississippi, and I don't know how many of you keep track of this, but the Democrat Travis Childers won a special election for the open House seat. Can't think of his name. Went on to the Senate, and he's a Republican, and taking Trent Lott's spot. And so the election was for the rest of the year for this House seat. And Democrats are now 3-for-3 in these kind of races. They won that House seat. Travis Childers won that special election, and he'll get a chance to run for it again next year. I think the Republicans are panicked over it. I mean, here we are in the first district of Mississippi that hasn't voted Democratic since God was a boy, and they spent a ton of money, the Republicans did. They spent fully one-fifth of the National Republican Campaign Committee's money to try and protect that seat. And Georgie Bush, for your information, won that district with over 60% of the vote last time around. And they spent one-fifth of their entire funds to try and protect that seat, and they lost. And they lost big. They lost it by 8 points. So that's a big one. That is a big one. And also, it's important to note that Netroots favorite Scott Kleeb won his primary to be the Democratic Senate nominee in Nebraska, beating a former Republican businessman, And Raimondo was the former Republican who was running as a Democrat, and he was very wealthy, and he put a bunch of money up against Klieb, and Klieb won. So things are looking good. Things are really looking good. I think the Republicans are worried. I think they stand to lose another dozen seats in the House, maybe more, something like that, somewhere in that range. And, of course, that'll give a big margin to them. And I also think we'll capture four, maybe five Senate seats as well. So, where are we at here today? As I said, my list of things to talk about today is very limited, so we do hope you'll give us a call at 866-546-5254. The government figures came out on the economy today, and good news, very, very good news. And I'm happy to report to you, after going over all the numbers and studying them very, very carefully, that there's a worry about inflation, but as long as you don't eat or you don't drive, there's no inflation. And if you don't eat or drive, you'll have plenty of money to spare as well. So that's my analysis of the government figures that came out today. As long as you don't have to eat, take part in public transportation or private transportation or drive at all, then you'll have extra money in your pocket. And you heard it here first, okay? You did hear it here first. Boo-hoo-hoo. I found a story out of Atlanta, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and I wanted to send out a special boo-hoo to broadcaster Neil Bortz. I don't know how many of you know Neil Bortz. I don't know how many of you even know who he is, but he's one of the most egotistical characters that I've ever met. He's a real piece of work. Anyway, the article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution says, somebody wants WSB radio personality Neil Bortz dead. A security official for WSB, Alexander Shapiro, phoned the complaint into police last week, saying that someone is harassing the radio station's conservative commentator by going to WSB's website and sending messages to him. Those messages state that the sender wishes Mr. Bortz were dead, according to an Atlanta police report. Shapiro told police Friday that he doesn't know who's behind the nasty emails. They come from an undisclosed address, the report said. Well, now, isn't that a shame? Isn't that the wildest thing you ever heard? People sending a death threat, or not a death threat, just wishing that he were dead to Neil Bortz's website. Neil, you ought to read my website for a while. You ought to live where I live. You ought to be a liberal Democrat and live where I live. Neil, death threats? Death threats? When we used to be down at Wink WNOG, we'd get emails saying they were waiting outside with a rifle. We had people emailing us constantly. We know where you live. We'll get you. All kinds of death threats. But Neil Bortz, oh my! Someone said they wish he were dead. Get over it, Neil. Get over it. Guy makes how many million bucks a year, and somebody says something like on web. And going back to Atlanta, actually Marietta, Georgia, which is the Atlanta metro area. My father, when I was a kid, we used to go to Florida, and my grandfather moved to Intercession City, Florida. That's very near Kissimmee. He moved there when I was 9 years old. Very traumatic event for me, because I was one of those kids that was raised at the knee of my grandfather, you know. I loved my grandfather. His name was Guy as well. And so I was close to my grandfather, and he moved, for health reasons, moved to Florida. And I was 9, so we a couple of times a year, would head down to Florida to visit my grandfather. And in those days, Route 75, Interstate 75, didn't go around Atlanta. Or, you know, you drove right down through. It wasn't an interstate. You drove right through Atlanta, and, of course, Atlanta wasn't near the size it is now. And on the outskirts of town in Atlanta at the time, I mean, I'm on the real suburban areas of it, there were still some dirt streets. No, I'm not talking about during the Civil War. There were still some dirt streets. And my father, being the dyed-in-the-wool Yankee northerner that he was, always would say when we drove through there, "Hey, look, boys," he'd say to my brother and I, "you can still see where Sherman marched to the sea." And by the way, that's not a comment you want to make when you're in Georgia. I learned that later on. Or South Carolina. Anyway, my father would always say that, and for good reason, I guess. We see this story coming out of Marietta, Georgia. I have a couple of relatives that live in Marietta, Georgia, and so I know that this attitude is nothing out of the ordinary in Marietta, Georgia, despite the protestations of several of the residents there that are now saying, "Oh my, this isn't indicative of us good folks in Marietta, Georgia at all." Well, I happen to think it is. I've been there plenty. I know the attitude there, and I'm not condemning everybody in Georgia, most certainly. But this guy that owns this bar, his name is Mike Norman. He's got a bar, and he's selling T-shirts with a picture of a monkey on the front eating a banana, and it says Obama in 08. Obama in 08. And really, the title of this story came from Kevin Beck, and he says, "Why we could use another William Tecumseh Sherman." This guy, Mike Norman, is proudly and defiantly hawking at his establishment in the form of T-shirts, very racially sensitive are these T-shirts, and you might think that he's an aberration in that area. You might think that he's alone, or certainly doesn't have much company in concerning his feelings about this, but you would be wrong. You would be in the minority of respondents to an Atlanta Journal-Constitution poll. As of 5:35 yesterday afternoon, the majority of the respondents on the Atlanta Journal-Constitution thought this guy was right on with these pictures of monkeys eating a banana with Obama in 08 T-shirts. He seems to do this sort of thing fairly often. He also had signs made up that said, "I wish Hillary had married OJ." Another sign on his billboard out front says, "No Habla Español and Never Will." Another one that says, "INS agents eat free." So why somebody who posts such things outside of his bar, why he even bothers lying about his intention and his motives is strange. But he's a real piece of work. And he says that those who are offended by this are hunting for a reason to be mad and insisted he's not a racist. Imagine that. A man having T-shirts printed with a monkey, smiling monkey, eating a banana with Obama 08 on the front, and he's saying he is not a racist. That's good. That's really a good one. He says he sees nothing wrong with depicting Obama as Curious George. He says, "Look at him, the hairline, the ears, he looks just like Curious George," Norman said. He said he did not design the shirts himself, but he bought them through a website, and he said he views it as just a coincidence that the character on the T-shirts is a monkey. Norman also said the proceeds raised from sales will be donated to the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Well, gosh, the guy has a kind heart after all, doesn't he? It turns out that he's a good person anyway. Right? Gonna donate the money to the Muscular Dystrophy Association. If I were Jerry Lewis, and I would count on this, if Jerry Lewis found out who this guy is and found out that he was giving a donation off the proceeds of the sale of these T-shirts, I'd bet you a dollar to a donut that Jerry Lewis would refuse the donation, as well he should. Cobb County, of course, has in recent years earned a lot of notoriety as a result of the actions of a different strain of jokers, which sought to put warning stickers. A lot of you remember this. They sought to put warning stickers inside science textbooks with the temerity to present evolution as if it had a single shred of evidence to back it up. So there you have it. A little bit of an indictment on Marietta, Georgia, and the people of the Atlanta area. Find that a pretty disgusting story, pretty disturbing story. Also a reminder that racism in this country is alive and well, just not in the Atlanta, Georgia area, not just in the South, but many places around this country. Racism is alive and well. Tell me something. Obama was not my first choice for this, for the Democratic nomination, as you well know. But I am prepared, just as James Carville said the other day, that as soon as he gets the nomination, I'll send him a check. Because above and beyond anything else politically right now, we have to make sure that this man, if he is the nominee, the eventual nominee, and it looks like he will be, we have to make sure that he wins the presidency at all costs. But how many of you have heard the same thing I've heard? I've heard it. You know, people aren't shy many times of expressing their prejudices to you, especially if you really haven't told them that much about you. And, you know, people that you don't know real well, you have conversations with them at the marketplace, at the workplace, whatever, and they don't really know you intimately. They don't know the depths of your soul and how you feel about social issues and all. And many people during this primary season. And I might add, while I was in Washington, D.C. the last couple of times as well, talking to many people who are steeped in politics, I have heard many, many, many times over this past year words to the effect of, well, we can't elect one of them. We can't elect one of them as president. I mean, we think about it. We can't have one of them as president. We can't. I've heard this from good Democrats. I've heard it from many Republicans. I've heard it from a lot of people, and I'll bet a lot of you have as well. And I always look at these people, and they look at you when they say this as though you're going to agree with them. And they look at you for some sort of approval. And I've offended many people, I'm sure, by looking at them and saying words to the effect, I thought you were civilized. I thought you were a progressive American. I thought you were a patriotic American. I thought you were a good Christian. And you're telling me that, well, we can't elect one of them as our president. We can't do it. We can't elect one of them. Think what that would do. Why, he'll probably appoint a bunch of black people to his cabinet. He'll probably have people throughout the government. Think about that. Think about what will happen. And, you know, at first I was shocked by that. Just shocked by it. I'm a realist. I understand there's a lot of racism in this country. I've been around. I've been around all over this country. But to have it so out in the open, so blatant, it's been more blatant. And I remember one time in my life that, and I've told you the story about the first time I ever saw, separate restrooms and separate drinking fountains and all that. The first place I ever saw that was Rock City, Tennessee, Chattanooga. First time I ever saw that. I'm from Ohio. When we would go to Florida, we would stop there. And I remember asking my father, hey, father, He was Dad. I didn't call him Father. Hey, Dad, what's up with these colored restrooms? What's up with these colored drinking fountains? Why? And my father, very embarrassed, had to try and explain to this 10-year-old kid that why one group of human beings wasn't allowed to drink out of a drinking fountain that the other group of human beings wasn't allowed to drink of. He had to explain to me that why that one group of human beings could go into these outhouses at Rock City, but the other ones couldn't. They had an even worse set of outhouses. I remember that so well, and I remember my little 10-year-old brain trying to process that. What? What do you mean? Why? How? This is America. And here we are, 50 years later. And I can't deny that there's been progress made along these lines. There's been a lot of progress made, I think. There are probably those that would disagree with me, that they would say, well, maybe it's just going underground more. But a racism is alive and well in this country. Don't kid yourself. And it's disgusting. And I don't know how many more years it'll take until we rid ourselves of such archaic and uncivil views. Probably be a long time. Why? But I remember where I was at the Take Back America conference not too long ago, and one evening during the conference, the conference was over for the day, and was having dinner, and we got into this discussion, this big discussion about the primary. Of course, it was all the talk. And a couple of people who I've known casually in the broadcasting business and also because of being in the broadcasting business and because of their affiliations around Washington, D.C., insiders, very, very, very political insiders, just shocked me. Just absolutely, I was blown away. If I'd have been sitting in Hattiesburg, Mississippi or Charleston, South Carolina and heard this, and I'm sorry, but that's how I feel about it. Well, I wouldn't have been so shocked. But I was sitting in Washington, D.C., where the populace is, what, 80% black? Got numerous representatives in the House of Representatives on the Democrat side who are non-white. And I'm so proud of that. We've got senators who are non-white. I'm so proud of that. And yet I have political insiders in Washington, D.C. looking at me, Democrats, and saying, well, you're not... You know, Obama, we can't do that. Can't do that. Well, anyway, that's my feelings on that. I wonder if you have feelings on that. Are you hearing that? Are you hearing blatant racism out and about by... Are you hearing it? I have, and I just wonder how many of you are as well. Florida is an odd place, especially South Florida, where I live. I don't consider South Florida part of the South. It's as South as you can get in the United States, and yet it is not what I would call part of the, quote, South. Up in northern Florida, it is. But down here where I live, most of the people are from someplace else, or their heritage is from up north. There are very few Florida residents here who have lived here for the duration, whose ancestry goes back very far, because until the advent of air conditioning, frankly, there weren't a hell of a lot of people lived here. So this isn't really part of the South. Yes, it was part of the Confederacy and all that, but you don't hear a lot of things here that you would hear other places. And yet, I have throughout. And don't get me wrong here. I don't want to separate the people from the South. I've heard plenty of racism. My grandfather, My grandfather, when I was a young kid, maybe 6-7 years old, my grandfather rented his tenant house to a black man. Didn't rent it to him. He hired him to be a hired hand on the farm. And he had a cross burned in his front yard, and the man left out of fear. That was in Ohio. And I know that it happened in Ohio and Indiana and Pennsylvania and New York. It happened all over the place. So I don't want to be very selective about this. It happens all over, and I wonder how prevalent it is, because it's important in this next election. It's very important, and it will float to the surface. We will find out in this coming election just how alive and well racism is in this country. Sorry is the American voter who looks at a Barack Obama and decides whether or not to vote for him because of the color of his skin. That's a very, very, very sorry individual. That's somebody that I wouldn't care to associate with. If you look at a man with his qualifications and his sense of decency and right and wrong and his intelligence, his great speech-making ability, his leadership ability, all of that. He's a well-rounded human being, has the qualifications to be president. And if you look at him, if you go in that voting booth and you're standing there deciding on whether or not to vote for him because the color of his skin, get out of the voting booth, because you really don't deserve the honor and the privilege of doing it. If that's a consideration for you, you don't deserve to vote. Oh, well, Guy, how can you say that? That's my personal preference. I can feel how... That's all right. Morally, if the color of the man's skin determines on whether you vote for him or not, you don't deserve to vote. That's my opinion. That's my opinion. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Into Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Tell me, when will you be mine? Tell me, cuando. Share a love divine. Please don't make me wait again. When will you say yes to me?
When will you say yes to me?
Tell me cuando.
Tell me cuando.
You mean happiness to me.
You mean happiness to me.
Oh, my love, please tell me when. Every moment's a day.
Oh, I see everybody was up dancing during a song. That's nice. That's nice. A lot of you up dancing. Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show, 866-546-5254 here in the Head On Radio Network, 3:30, coming up on 3:37 in the afternoon, live from Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area, home of the beautiful sandy beaches and blue waters. And, boy, it's getting warm this time of year. We'd be heading for that time when it's 95 every afternoon and rains about 4 o'clock for a half hour. That's coming up pretty soon. Pretty dry right now, as you've seen on the news with the fires over on the East Coast. Hope they don't come over here. Actually, last week, there was a fire over Lake Okeechobee, and as many of you know, Lake Okeechobee is a huge lake over in the center of South Florida, and the smoke was blowing clear over here on the west side. Opened my front door and looked out, and there's a cloud of smoke out there, and it's coming from, oh, I don't know, what, 70 miles away? Something like that. So that smoke gets pretty rough. And that's quite a fire they got going over there in the East Coast right now. I did want to talk a little bit about John McCain today. You know, I always do talk about John McCain. John McCain, to me, is a fascinating character. And his candidacy for the presidency of the United States, I must tell you, him ending up with the nomination, that is, if he really does beat Ron Paul. I have a hard time with that Ron Paul thing. Anyway, he's the, as they keep calling him, the presumptive nominee. I was somewhat taken aback by all that. I was very surprised, and I'm no political rookie, but I got to tell you, and as many of you know, listen to the show every day, I was very surprised when John McCain ended up with the nomination. It was a very poor group of nominees, possible nominees, probably the weakest group that I've seen the Republicans ever have, and John McCain is probably one of the weaker candidates they've ever had, every bit as weak as Bob Dole. I mean, hey, Bob Dole was a war hero, too, and you know how I talk about war hero heroism and all, but just as much a war hero as John McCain, if you want to qualify either of them as war heroes. But it was a poor field. It was a very poor field, but I really didn't think John McCain would float to the top of that one. I really didn't. I thought somebody a little more refined. I thought somebody a little more well-spoken. But when you stop and look back at the field, you know, Duncan Hunter and Tom Tancredo and the actor from Tennessee, Fred, it's just a rough-looking group. And so when I look back on it now, I think, well, maybe it's not a surprise John McCain ended up there. Although a lot of them still don't care much for him in the Republican Party. I mean, Rush Limbaugh said that McCain's going to destroy the Republican Party. That is what he said. And Ann Coulter and Limbaugh's all over him again right now. What's the latest thing, McCain? I can't remember what it was. Limbaugh's been all over him. He was just all over him for something yesterday. Oh, about McCain wanting to help go green. McCain being sensitive to the environment. Of course, anybody on the left or on the right rather that says that they're for protecting the environment, they're some sort of a traitor to the Republican Party because the neocons don't want a damn thing to do with saving the planet for future generations. They've made that abundantly clear. So Limbaugh was going nuts on that again the other day. But and then we had Ann Coulter. She said she'd campaign for Hillary if McCain is the nominee. Now, this gives her a chance to go back on that now. Will she campaign for Obama since McCain is the nominee? I wonder. It'll give her a way out of this, I suppose. But the GOP voting base really ignored their popular icons, realizing that if they're going to win the White House and make any headway regaining Capitol Hill, they're going to have to abandon the right-wing establishment for a while, because I really think it's dead. And they know that Americans in general have really had it with the abject failure of this GOP one-party state that's flourished for quite a while now. And they can't win with another Bush or another Santorum or another delay, another neocon. Those days are over with, and I think they know that, and they're starting to see it with some of these races around the country for the House. And so now they've got John McCain, and he's a guy that the hardcore right-wingers love to hate, or so they say. And Limbaugh, before yesterday, said, you know, he's actually going to help McCain. He said, if I really wanted to torpedo McCain, I'd endorse him, conferring some sort of reverse psychological plot to get McCain into the White House. But it's a convenient explanation for all the pre-coronation vitriol. But it's also a revealing admittance that the right wing knows they can't win anymore. They know that they're flaming out. They know that their movement is dying. A lot of things they are, but one thing they're not. They're not stupid, a lot of them, some of them, few of them. But they know that this neocon movement is dying. They know the jig's up on this, and the American people are completely fed up with them. Just look at the polls. And now with McCain having the nomination, his critics have had to reverse course and both support him and try and drag him to their side. And this all begs the question, really, who is the real John McCain? And I don't think anybody has any idea who is the real John McCain. I think I do. And we'll talk a lot about that between now and November the 5th. But when you look at his positions and his voting record over the years, it's really hard to peg the man down. He's been against abortion in almost all cases, but then on the other side, he favors embryonic stem cell and fetal tissue research, which the two don't go together. And he's a balanced budget hawk, but now he pledges to never increase taxes under any circumstances. And he's often said that, and you tell me, how do you do that? How do you balance a budget when the spending goes up and you don't increase taxes? How do you do that? Someone explain that to me. And you know, he's often said that on civil rights issues that they ought to be left to the states. But then he voted against such rights and for the federal authoritarianism. He's a corporatist all the way, and I plan on talking about that quite a bit today. He is a corporatist, an avowed corporatist, and a populist. He's all over the place. But in the end, he is a conservative. And by any reasonable interpretation of the word, he is a conservative. And, you know, it makes you think maybe Limbaugh's been playing his audience all along. I don't know. But when you look at McCain, when you look at the broad picture of John McCain, you'll find that he's got something for everybody to love and something for everybody to hate. Everybody loves the fact that he was a POW and he came through that okay, you know, his military experience and all that. And it's kind of a, what am I searching for? It's a metaphor for the man himself. He's hot and he's cold. He's on, he's off. He's calm and he's angry. And he's a man of such extremes. And yet somehow he's looked upon as a man of moderation by a lot of people. He can be totally pragmatic. He can be ideological. he can be flexible when he needs to be, and very strident. He's really hard to put down, to pin down. And I think that he's putting on a great act right now. He's got his Straight Talk Express out there running down the middle of the road, but I get the distinct feeling that he'd move this Straight Talk Express of his straight to the far right side of the road the day after he won the general election. I think a lot of people that think he's a moderate, a lot of people think that he is, in fact, running a Straight Talk Express. I think they'll be shocked if he got elected at what would take place right afterwards. You would see the real John McCain come out, and he is no moderate. It's time to face the facts about John McCain. Bush is McCain light. McCain isn't another Bush. Bush is McCain light. Make no mistake about that. John Sidney McCain is no maverick. This maverick appearance that he's trying to put forth, that's BS. He's a hard right neocon who's prepared to drag us into as many wars as necessary to support his radical militaristic thinking. That's who John McCain is. And I will not fail to point that out at every opportunity between now and the time for election in November. Anybody who thinks John McCain is just some sort of a softy, he's down the middle of the road guy, they don't have any idea about John McCain. And I'd like to point this out. I got a really good note from a cyber friend named Captain Fogg. Some of you may know him. And let me just read this note from him today. Rolling, 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 keep moving, moving, moving. Though they're disapproving, keep them doggies moving. Rawhide. Samuel A. Maverick. I didn't know this. Samuel A. Maverick, 1803 to 1870, had a life filled with adventures too numerous to list. But in his later years as a rancher who refused to brand his cattle, his name entered the American vocabulary as a nonconformist, a maverick, a person of independent thought and action. That's hardly descriptive of John McCain, a man who followed in the family tradition of military careers, used family connections to get into the Naval Academy and nearly flunked out, and whose political career is and has been marked by the influence of lobbyists and special interest spokesmen of dubious allegiance. The cattle at this Maverick's ranch seem to have dubious markings on them, and maybe it's time someone did brand John McCain's cattle. Some of the old dogies in the McCain corral, two of his campaign staff, that is, seem to have spent time grazing in Burma, in the pastures of the criminal junta, currently letting huge numbers of people starve to death while stealing their food. What advice has John the Maverick been taking from them? Charlie Black, McCain's campaign chairman, ran a lobbying firm that represented vicious dictators like Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines and Mobutu in Zaire, even terrorist rebel Jonas Savimbi in Angola. What advice has Cowboy John McCain been taking from Charlie Black? How well does he examine the backgrounds of his advisor? Or is it that these are the kind of people he prefers to associate with and take advice from? Black was also an advisor to Ahmed Shalabi, a man who may have been working as a double agent for Iran and whose mendacious advice to the Bush administration fed their lust to invade Iraq, has also been affiliated with Blackwater Worldwide, the firm that has made a colossal killing, pun intended, from the war. And then there's campaign co-chair Tom Leffler, who has represented the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Need I say more? For a man who's supposed to be independent of the influences of others and disdainful of lobbyists, it's a bit strange how the others who influence him seem to be former lobbyists for repressive dictators and oil interests, and others who see the U.S. as a cash cow to be milked dry and then perhaps led to slaughter. Maybe it's time to round them up and move them out, the whole damn lot of them. Keep those doggies moving, rawhide. John McCain a maverick? I don't think so. I don't think so. You didn't hear it here first. You've heard it for a long time here now. Really, really keep in mind that John McCain is not Bush the Third. I've said, you know, a third term of Bush. I've said that all along. But another Bush term on steroids, perhaps. Perhaps that's the way to put it. Is he linked with George Bush at the hip? You better believe it. But do remember that John McCain has taken credit for the surge. He doesn't think it would have happened without him, that he was a strong proponent of it. And what has the surge gotten us? How much closer to victory in Iraq has it gotten us? I wonder. And we have his good friend, Junior Bush, political partner of John Sidney McCain III. Kind of in another bring it on moment. Bush says electing a Democratic president could lead to a new attack on the U.S. Yes, it's true. Junior George W. Bush said Tuesday that he was disappointed in flawed intelligence before the Iraq War and was concerned, and this is the part of the statement that I just love, he was concerned that if a Democrat wins the presidency in November and withdrew troops prematurely, it could, quote, eventually lead to another attack in the United States, end quote. Oh, how soon will it be? How soon will it be that the threat level will be raised all the way up, or most of the way up? How many times will we hear of more possible attacks on the United States that have been thwarted by the Bush administration, that have been thwarted by these neocon Republicans? How much he has protected us from another attack so that they can elect John Sidney McCain III to the presidency. Do you doubt that that was one of their tactics in the last election, keeping the threat level up? And, oh gosh, we found this group of terrorists in Miami, and we found this group in Virginia, and we found this group in Chicago. Never mind that most of these people, what was it, two of the groups didn't have enough money to buy shoes? Never mind that none of them were credible at all. If they catch somebody walking down the street with a kid with a plastic gun, they're going to claim he's a terrorist now. And that they saved us. They saved us from another attack. Bush saved us. And therefore, the Republicans have been doing all they can to keep America safe. And that's why we have to keep 150,000 troops in Iraq. Because it's working. It's keeping us safe. Mark my word, the fear-mongering will begin. The threat level will be raised. We might even see the troops back at the airports and all that like we did there for a while. If you don't think that they'll use fear-mongering to aid themselves in this election, you're crazy. They'll bring out the big guns of fear-mongering. I don't know. Trying to think what they could do that they haven't done. I guess they could fly over a few black helicopters over us or do something like that. They will. They'll raise the threat level. They'll raise the fear. How else have they gotten elected? Because they're strong on defense. Strong on defense. The Democrats are a bunch of cowards, and we are strong on defense. Yeah. Tell it to the million Iraqis that are dead. Tell it to the families of the over 4,000 Americans that are dead from Iraq. Tell it to those families about all the progress that we've made in Iraq. Convince them that we're better off now than we were 5 years ago in Iraq or in this country domestically or anything else. It's not possible for any thinking person to accept that kind of thinking from him. It is not possible. So get ready for that. We're hearing the threats, and by the way, I have it on good authority, and I know many of you have heard it as well. The rumor is sweeping Washington as we speak right now that an attack on Iran is imminent. Not today, perhaps. They've got the sites picked out for missile attacks and for bombing attacks. They are going to do it. Unless by some miracle they're held back from it, they are going to do it. And that, folks, will serve as getting a lot of people excited once again. Oh, we're in another attack here. We're in serious jeopardy. Vote Republican. Why, we went in and we blew up them damn Iranians. They got them their bombs. They were them WMDs. They had them. Yeah. And so we blew them up and we saved you. So vote Republican and we'll keep you safe. I want to talk a lot about that coming up in the next hour, how the Republicans have kept us so safe. Tell it to people in London. Tell it to people in Spain. Tell it to the people in Baghdad. And tell it to people in Sadr City. Tell it to the people in Kabul. And did you know they're taking time out from the war right now in Afghanistan to harvest the poppies? Did you know that? I'm not kidding. They've called a timeout. Timeout. So that all the farmers could hire all the kids from town and all that to come on out and scrape the goo out of the poppy bulbs that are bulging with it right now, and so that they can make the heroin. I'm not kidding you now. You think I'm kidding you? They have called a timeout. They don't have any guys in striped shirts running around with whistles, but they have called a timeout, and so everybody is under this kind of ceasefire that's understood, and they say, okay, go ahead and harvest your poppies, and nobody wants to get the farmers pissed at them, and so the Taliban is making sure the farmers get their crop harvested, and the American troops and Canadian troops and whoever else is in there, they're making sure the farmers get their crop harvest, scrape that black goo, white goo, and all that stuff out of those bulbs and process it into heroin so it can kill a lot of people with it. That's their economy, and we've called a timeout and says, hey, have at it. Say no to drugs, but go ahead and harvest those poppies, huh? But say no to drugs. Wonder what Nancy Reagan thinks of that, huh? Didn't she the one that came up with that, say no to drugs? I think she was. Not sure. Well, I don't know. Anyway, 866-546-5254. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. And when we come back, we're going to have some more to say about John McCain. We've got a lot more to say about John McCain. I've got more to say about John McCain than I care to remember. But hey, he's the enemy right now. And yes, I am using that word. Politically, he is the enemy. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news, and I expect that you'll be here as well.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. West Virginia's mostly white working class handed Hillary Clinton a blowout win against Barack Obama in the Democratic presidential primary. Clinton told her supporters she's in this race till the end.
I'm in this race for the millions of Americans who know that we can do better in our country. For the nurse on her second shift, for the worker on the line, for the waitress on her feet, for the small business owner, the farmer, the teacher, the coal miner, the trucker, the soldier, the veteran, the college student.
The next primary state is Kentucky, where Clinton has a strong lead in the polls. She's insisting that the Michigan and Florida delegations also count in the nomination process. Her campaign says counting those votes, along with the rest of the final states, Clinton will edge Obama in the overall popular primary vote. Clinton insists she's the strongest candidate to face John McCain in the fall. Leaders from Colombia's biggest unions are joining U.S. labor leaders and some members of Congress today in Washington to highlight opposition to the U.S.-Colombian Free Trade Agreement. Violence is common against Colombian trade unionists, and U.S. labor is firmly against the proposed agreement because they say it will hurt workers in both countries. The Massachusetts AFL-CIO awarded more than 500 scholarships during its annual banquet last weekend. Jesse Russell reports.
Expressing a commitment to higher education, the Massachusetts AFL-CIO presented $1 million worth of scholarships during the organization's annual banquet. More than 200 students benefited from the massive presentation. For the past 50 years, the organization has been awarding scholarship money to high school students moving on to college. Over the past 9 years, Massachusetts AFL has given out more than $7 million in scholarship money. Studies suggest that workers with a college education earned 45% more on average than workers without.
New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is opposing two union-backed bills on Capitol Hill. The mayor wrote in a letter that the bills could cost the city $300 million per year. But AFSCME District Council 37, the organization representing the majority of New York City's municipal workers, isn't buying that figure. One bill allows nurses to retire at the age of 50, while the other lays out a plan for members of Council 37 to buy into an early retirement plan originally offered in 1995.
Here is today's economic report. Americans are lacking faith in the economy. A new Bloomberg poll suggests only 19% believe the economy will improve over the next 6 months, while 37% expect it to be worse. The most pessimistic age group is 35 to 64-year-olds. 47% of that age group believe it is going to be worse.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You can do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment, or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/pass it on. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, if you don't get those phones rolling this hour, I'm going to go on strike. Yes, I will. I belong to the Internet Broadcasters of America Union, and I'm going out. I'm going out on a picket line right out front of the studio here if you don't get those phones rolling. Huh? 866-546-5254. I'm going to make a sign that says audience unfair. That's what I'm going to do. And I'm going out, and I'm going to picket. And I can do it, too. I will. You know I'll do it. 866-546-5254. Love to have you join me. Hey, I got a lot of interesting email during the break. I try and catch up on it during then. I can't read it all, but you get some of it. Our good friend Stuart sends a really interesting thought. This is an interesting thought, and I had never thought about it this way. Have you? Stuart says, ever wonder why the conservatives hate John McCain but love Joe Lieberman? Seems sort of paradoxical. You bet it does. You bet it does. Comes right to it. They don't love Joe Lieberman because he agrees with them on a lot of things. They love Joe Lieberman because he is a traitorous rat to the Democratic Party. That's why they like him. That's all. There's nothing to like there. The man swings with the wind politically. The man will do whatever he needs to do politically. Probably one of the worst political whores, and I hate to say that about a refined gentleman such as Joe Lieberman, but he is. Ever wonder why the conservatives hate John McCain but love Joe Lieberman? Seems sort of paradoxical. Well, it most certainly does. Thanks, Stuart. That's a good thought. Interesting thought. What else do we get here? All right, and we got a good note from David. David, thanks for listening. He says, how many wars have our black brothers and sisters started for the United States? Are they responsible for rising gas prices? Did they import all the cocaine, heroin, and crack into this country? Are black Americans responsible for high unemployment? Are black Americans responsible for the occupation of Iraq? Did black Americans put Bush Co. in power? Did they put Reagan in? Are black Americans responsible for all these people without health insurance? Are black Americans responsible for torture in the war on terror? Peace, David. David, thank you for your thoughts. Good to hear from you as well. Love to hear your thoughts, and I will try and get as many of them up as we can. Don't forget, we got John Dean with us tomorrow. John Dean, author of Worse Than Watergate, Conservatives Without Conscience, let me see, what's the other one, Broken Government, and Pure Goldwater. John, always a great interview, an interesting guy, a man that his political instincts are just the best, just absolutely the best. And you know what? Aside from all that, and I know you've all seen John on TV and you've heard him here, he and his wife, Mo, are just wonderful people. They really are. They're the salt of the earth. Just very friendly, down-to-earth, and very intelligent people and very nice to talk to. So, John Dean on with us tomorrow, I think at the top of the hour. I think so. Hey, I see John McCain, they got the pressure on for him to release his tax returns, you know. Oh, and before I talk about that, here's a good note I got from the DNC this afternoon. Democratic National Committee Chairman Howard Dean, and I think this is great news, Howard Dean announced today that the DNC has signed a joint fundraising agreement with the Clinton and Obama campaigns, and as part of the agreement, a new entity called the Democratic White House Victory Fund has been formed. The fund will allow both candidates to raise money for the party, forming one joint fundraising committee account that will accept money for the nominee's primary and general election and for the DNC. Howard said, and let me quote Howard here, the Democratic Party is incredibly fortunate to have two strong candidates who have generated transformational enthusiasm across the country. We've seen historic turnout as new voters have come out to show their support for our candidates, and fundraising numbers have been through the roof, said Democratic National Chairman Howard Dean. While this is a close primary, at the end of the day, both of our candidates understand that this election is about the future of our country. And in signing this agreement, Senator Clinton and Senator Obama are ensuring that we have the resources needed to win the White House no matter who the nominee is. The message is clear. Democrats are unified to put a Democrat back in the White House so that we can get our economy back on track, bring our troops home, and finally do something about our ailing health care system. Good news. Good news. Good to see a little cooperation. Gradually, this thing's going to heal up. Don't worry about it. They will. It will. I see we still don't have a credible total on the death count in the terrible Myanmar disaster and the terrible Chinese earthquake. We don't have credible death tolls on either of them. Suffice to say, they're both horrendous and both a tragedy to humanity. And we wish those people well, and we hope and pray that whatever's the best for them can be had somehow. Hope they get the food and sustenance that they need. So far, we know it's been not being done for the people in Myanmar. And the Chinese have a huge disaster on their hand there. It covers many, many miles, many thousands of square miles. And is our hope that they can do the best they can. I wanted to talk a little bit about McCain and their tax release. You know, you heard all this about Hillary Clinton, right? It was a mantra that went on and on and on. The drumbeat from the media was constant. It was incessant. When will the Clintons really release their tax returns? And you remember when Theresa Heinz Kerry when John Kerry was running for the presidency. When is Theresa Heinz Kerry going to release her tax information? Why, we've got to know. We've got to know. She's rich, and we've got to know. And Hillary and Bill Clinton, we've got to have their tax returns. When's it going to be? Day after day after day, they droned on and on and on about the Clintons' tax return. And when they were finally released, we found out that, guess what? The Clintons have made a ton of money in the past 7 years. Well, you know, when you're the highest-priced speaker in the world, and you're the most prolific speaker, and one of the best speakers in the world, and when you're one of the best writers, and you write a book that's a huge hit, you make a lot of money. That's how it is. I know the Republicans aren't used to having one of their authors actually write a book that people will buy rather than having to distribute it to the right-wing think tanks so that they can pump up the numbers on the bestseller list and make some money for the Ann Coulters of the world and the Sean Hannitys of the world. Bill Clinton didn't have anybody out there buying the first 50 or 100,000 copies to give away free of his book. No, he actually wrote a good book. And he actually gives a great speech. And he's actually one of the most recognized and most admired men in the world. And he's an ex-president of the United States of America. Did you think that he wouldn't make a lot of money? Frankly, I was not one bit surprised at the amount of money that the Clintons have made during this time. Not one bit. Knowing that the books have been out, they got the great advances on the books, they got the royalties off the books, the Bill's speaking tour. Hell yes, they made a lot of money. Don't forget, they had a lot of legal bills to pay, too. But getting back to what I started on, we've got to have the Clintons' tax returns. Got to have it, got to have it, got to have it. Well, what about Cindy McCain's tax returns? Do you see any big outcry coming from the media about Cindy McCain's tax returns? She's very wealthy, you know. She may well be as wealthy or wealthier than Theresa Heinz Kerry, and certainly wealthier than the Clintons. Finally, the McCain's campaign decision to withhold Cindy McCain's tax returns has drawn a little bit of criticism from across the political spectrum, but you're still not hearing as much about it as you did about the Clintons. This morning, really, they had editorials in both the Washington Post and the Washington Times, which is pretty surprising. The Reverend Moon newspaper. They should call it the Mooney Times. They really should. Tony Blankley and the Mooney Times. That's what they should have right now. Mooney Times. You know, every time I go to Washington, I read the Washington Post about every day. But when I go to Washington, I do a comparison with the Washington Times and the Washington Post. Oh, my God. National Enquirer does a better job than the Washington Times. Anyway, both the papers in Washington today put out calls for the McCain campaign to release Cindy McCain's tax returns. And this follows a column in yesterday's New York Observer that blasts McCain for his hypocrisy on his disclosure, noting that Mrs. McCain's corporate jet has been flying him and his entourage of lobbyists around the country at bargain rates, you see. And last week on the Today Show, Cindy McCain said Senator and Mrs. McCain would never release her tax returns, not even if she becomes First Lady. Yes, she did say that on the Today Show last week. And it's no secret that John McCain's political career it's been paid for by Cindy McCain, by and large, her personal wealth and her business ties. And McCain released just 2 years of his own tax returns. And that's a whole lot less than any of the party nominees since Ronald Reagan back in 1980. So, are we having fairness in the media once again? Do we have a fairness doctrine by the media? have the same standards for everybody? Is it fair that they went on and on and on about the Clintons, but now that the McCain said they're not, no, we're not putting ours out the way they did. No, we're not going to. Is he different? Is he better? Isn't he respecting the voters, disrespecting the voters by doing this? Isn't he? Don't the voters have the right to examine the links between his political career and his business ventures and Cindy's business ventures? He ought to release Cindy McCain's tax returns right now. When it comes right down to it, how can John McCain expect the American people to trust him to lead our country if he's not even willing to apply the standards of openness and accountability that he expects from everybody else and to his own campaign? Let me read you just a little piece out of the Washington Post today. It says, for a candidate who puts a premium on transparency and ethics, John McCain has been slow and grudging in releasing tax information. He did not commit to doing so until after he'd secured the nomination, and then he disclosed only 2 years of taxes, far less than his Democratic rivals. Mr. McCain's wife, the heir to a liquor and beer distributorship, declined to release her returns, citing, as Ms. Hines Carey did, her children's privacy. Releasing tax information entails intrusion. But as we wrote 4 years ago, presidential candidates and their spouses relinquish a significant measure of privacy. Meanwhile, tax returns provide information not contained in financial disclosure forms, such as charitable contribution and the use of tax shelters. And for Mrs. McCain to say, as she did on NBC's Today Show, that she would never release her tax returns, not even if she were to become First Lady, is unacceptable. This is a privacy issue, she said. My husband is the candidate. And from the Washington Times, I'm very surprised by this in the Washington Times. Cindy McCain's refuses to release her tax returns. This is not just a questionable political decision that threatens to haunt her husband's campaign for the next 6 months. It's also the wrong decision. That from the Washington Times. The Washington Times also has admitted that McCain has benefited from Cindy McCain's wealth. Well, that goes without saying. John McCain would not be in the United States Senate had it not been for the wealth of his wife, Cindy McCain. The wife that John McCain left his other wife for, by the way, who didn't have a significant fortune like this one does. Just thought I'd mention that. Just wanted to mention it. 866-546-5254. Hasn't been a lot of talk about the war the past few days. Yes, there's the ceasefire, if you want to call it that. Very tentative, very tenuous ceasefire that's taking place between the militias, the Mahdi Army, the Iraqi Army, and the U.S. right now. Very tenuous. What do you say? It's reversible. Petraeus said any of the gains we had have been reversible and tenuous, I think. Something like that. I don't know when the Democrats are going to get on the right track here with getting out of Iraq. Still, just whatever you need, Mr. President, we'll give it to you. Whatever kind of funding you want, we'll give it to you without a fight. We'll. You need $100 billion? Hey, here's a check. You need $78 billion? Here's a check. Here's another check. We'll give you all the checks you need just keep on keeping on. And we'll complain a little bit over here on the side, but do know, Mr. President, that we will give you all the money that you need. You will squawk a little here and there for political reasons. You know how that goes. But when we get down to brass tacks, Junior, we'll give you all the dough you need for your war. Because we know damn well that if we don't, you'll make us look like, hey, we're starving our troops to death over there. And you've got the media on your side, and you'll be able to do that, and you'll be able to successfully do that. So, therefore, you're blackmailing us. It's extortion. And we'll give you everything you need. I don't know when the Democrats are going to realize that, number one, the arguments for withdrawing from Iraq are absolutely a slam dunk if you get into the true argument of the situation. And secondly, we seem to lose sight of how rock solid the case for withdrawing really is. The central government in Iraq is nothing. The surge has had some successes. Stabilizing a central government in Iraq has made no progress whatsoever. None. We've quelled the some of the fighting, some of the trouble, some of the death and destruction is coming back again now. But we really haven't been successful in building any kind of a unified Iraq, especially when you consider much of the success that we have enjoyed, if enjoyed indeed is the right word, much of this so-called success that we've had is because we've gone around with a trunk full of money paying off a lot of different local tribal leaders. And are we going to continue to do that ad infinitum? I don't think so. First of all, we can't afford to do it. Secondly, it's wrong. And secondly, it's really not helping. As we've said many times, that's the old story of having to tie a pork chop around a kid's neck to get the dog to play with him. That's what we're doing. We're paying off the Iraqi tribal leaders, the local tribal leaders. And so what we keep hearing from the Republicans day in and day out is that somehow, the burden of proof for withdrawing our troops out of Iraq, that we bear the burden of proof. I don't think so. I mean, there's all the evidence in the world to show that there's a massive cost when you throw this on the scales, a massive cost on one side and little, if any, benefits on the other side. In fact, it's not even close. If you do any kind of a strategic cost-benefit analysis out of the whole thing, it's not close. There's nothing whatsoever, and if you differ with me, I would hope that you'd call or send us a note explaining your position. But there is nothing to show that any kind of a continued occupation is going to get us any closer to resolving this situation than it has in the last 5 years. It doesn't make any sense. The burden of proof for staying in Iraq belongs on the Bush administration and John McCain, who wants to keep it going. If there's going to be any sort of a settlement in that part of the world, the United States of America is not going to affect that settlement. We will not. We will need some sort of a coalition with other nations. And so far, we have been either unwilling or unable to bring any international pressure to bear on the situation at all. I see that as the only means by which to bring any, and I hesitate to use the word, successful conclusion to this. And conclusion is completely the wrong word. Any successful temporary outcome, say what you will, is by somehow bringing some international pressure to bear on this and some outside of a some sort of an outside-in strategy. But then again, isn't that what Baker and Hamilton and all of them were telling us a couple of years ago or so? Of course it was. It's so Democrats in Congress, Democrats in position of power and any kind of control, get off your asses. Get off your asses and get some guts. And let's start putting some pressure on these people over this. Instead of running the other way every time it's brought up. And let's face it, that's what you've been doing. It's exactly what you've been doing. Well, I'm going to pause for a break for just a moment. We'll have a couple of words from John McCain and his spiritual advisor. And we'll be right back after a couple of words.
Islam is an anti-Christ religion that intends through violence to conquer the world.
Reverend and Marshall. I'm very honored today to have one of the truly great leaders in America, a moral compass, a spiritual guide, Pastor Rob Parsley, who is here.
The fact is that America was founded, I'm going to stagger you right now, America was founded in part with the intention of seeing this false religion destroyed. Muhammad received revelations from demon spirits, not from the living God.
I want to say thank you for being here. I want to thank you for, Rob, for your kind introduction.
America has historically understood herself to be a bastion against Islam in the world.
For your leadership and your guidance, I'm very grateful you're here, sir.
In fact, I'll tell you this. I do not believe our nation can truly fulfill its divine purpose until we understand our historical conflict with Islam.
And I want to assure you, he should be talking, not me.
When it comes to Islam, now the greatest religious enemy of our civilization in the world, it's dangerous.
We were built for the battle. We were created for the conflict. We get off on warfare.
Stands on golden sand and watches the ships that go sailing somewhere beyond the sea. She's there watching for me. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms. Star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt my heart will lead me there soon. Beyond the shore,
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100. That'd be fine with me.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100.
If all he offers is more of the same, is John McCain the right choice for America's future? The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Thanks for the question, you old jerk.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. Always appreciate knowing that all of you are listening and hope you'll participate in the show. You know, ran across a story today that I don't know when I'm going to learn. I don't know when I'm going to learn to push these things aside and just take them for what they are. Take them for the ignorance and stupidity that they really are, but I just can't. I just can't, because when words like these come out of the President of the United States' mouth, it just infuriates me. It doesn't infuriate me that he personally is that stupid. It infuriates me that the American people were stupid enough to put this moron into office. This insensitive man that has no caring for his fellow man whatsoever, a true sociopath, if there ever was one, is the President of the United States as we speak. And I see that in these polls, when we're talking about 82% of the people think that he's not doing a good job. Did you know that's only 7% of Democrats, but 66% of Republicans think that he's doing an okay job? Two out of three Republicans think that... It makes you just want to beat your head against the wall to make it feel better. It really does. To think that two out of three Republicans think this man is doing an okay job as president. Am I dreaming? Am I in a time warp someplace when I hear stories, figures like that? But here's the thing that got me upset today. And again, I don't know that I blame the man personally. I blame the voters, because he can't help the fact that he's woefully deficient in brain cells. Woefully. I don't know whether it was the cocaine, the alcohol, something destroyed the man's brain. President George W. Bush said on Tuesday that he quit playing golf in 2003 out of respect for the families of Americans killed in the war in Iraq. He quit playing golf in 2003 out of respect for the families of Americans killed in the war in Iraq. He said, "I don't want some mom whose son may have recently died to see the commander-in-chief playing golf." He said in an interview with Yahoo and Politico.com, "I feel I owe it to the family to be in solidarity as best I can with them. And I think playing golf during a war just sends the wrong signal," he said. Bush said his last round of golf was in August 2003 when he was informed that a truck bomb had wrecked the UN headquarters in Baghdad, killing 22 people, including UN envoy Sergio Vieira de Mello. "They pulled me off the golf course and I said, you know, it's just not worth it anymore to do." What are we supposed to do? Give him a medal because he's not playing golf anymore? Do we have an appreciation for how many military funerals he has attended? Zero. He goes to these press club things and says, "Oh, there's no WMDs here, no WMDs." Ha 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 ha. He's met with members of the national championship football team. He throws out pitches at the baseball games. He rides his bike. He works out. Says, I really don't care where Osama bin Laden is anymore. Don't know. Don't care. He's in opposition to expanding the GI Bill. But not to worry. Everybody can rest easily. He's not playing golf anymore. How is it even fathomable that we have a president of the United States, the man who has the power over 300 million people, who would say a thing like that? I am stunned. Stunned that even he would say something so absolutely absurd. But speaking of absurd, we've been talking about the military and their enhancement program to send out the retired military to talk up the war for the Bush administration about the 4,500 appearances that Barry McCafferty and all those have made on TV. And you wonder, you know, some of these people are career military people. And they've been in the Pentagon for a long time. And you wonder if that is their actual political opinion when they go out and talk about things. Or are they so malleable and so able to be manipulated that they'll say anything for whoever the boss is? And the reason I ask that is last month the Pentagon released a document collection on its military analyst propaganda program, and this is from Think Progress. In a July 2006 email between public affairs official Jeffrey Gordon and other Pentagon officials, now this is their public affairs official, Gordon attached several articles on detention policy by right-wing talkers, including Bill O'Reilly and Michelle Malkin, that he said were thoughtful. In a later email, Gordon said officials should use the articles with military analysts as appropriate. And here's the actual email. Gentlemen, as requested, attached document contains four thoughtful articles, columns about Guantanamo from Charles Krauthammer, Bill O'Reilly, and Michelle Malkin. I have to call out OGC and DOJ to provide some inputs as well. I envision that I will have more material tomorrow morning. What were the thoughtful remarks of Malkin and O'Reilly on the detention policy in Guantanamo? In the Malkin column, she said that a, quote, far greater threat, unquote, than Guantanamo to America is the unseriousness and hypocrisy of the terrorist abetting left, end quote. A far greater threat. O'Reilly said that there were only minor cases of abuse there, in referring to Guantanamo. In fact, when the news broke of suicides at the prison, and keep in mind, these are people in many cases that have been, in all cases, that have been convicted of nothing. There's been no military tribunals to convict anybody as of yet. And there have been many people released from Guantanamo, some that we know are guilty of nothing. And so when the news broke of suicides in the prison by some of these people, Malkin's reaction was, quote, boo freaking who, end quote.
What a
reprehensible human being is Michelle Malkin. And I see we've got another black eye our government has. Folks, what has happened to our government during this Bush administration? Why have we allowed it? And I hate to preach on and on and on about it every single day, but how have we allowed this to happen? Why have we been so apathetic? Why have we allowed this to happen? How could we have allowed this to happen? This is a nation full of some good and decent people. I know the majority of them are. And how could we have allowed the executive branch to run wild? How could the Congress of the United States have settled for letting the executive branch run wild? Do anything they want. For the past 7 years, virtually unchallenged. They wanted to do it, they've done it. And they've stuck their finger in the Democrats' eye, or gave them the finger, one or the other, or both. Said, you don't count, for anything. We're the executive branch, we're the White House, we will do what we please. The president has the ultimate authority. Screw the Constitution. It's a piece of paper. But now we have another black eye. Another abhorrent tactic by the government of the United States of America. The United States government has injected... God, you think about things like this in some sort of a horror movie, in a cheap B-movie about, during the Vietnam War or something. The U.S. government has injected hundreds of foreigners. It is deported with the dangerous psychotropic drugs against their will to keep them sedated during the trip back to their home country, according to medical records, internal documents, and interviews with the people who have been drugged. The government's forced use of antipsychotic drugs in people who have no history of mental illness includes a dozens of cases in which the pre-flight cocktail, as the document calls it, has had such a potent effect that federal guards needed a wheelchair to move the slumped deportee onto an airplane. Involuntary chemical restraint of detainees, unless there's a medical justification, is a violation of some international human rights codes. The practice is banned by several countries where confidential documents make clear U.S. escorts have been unable to inject deportees with extra doses of drugs during layovers en route to faraway places. And the punchline of all this? After injecting the sedatives, the nurse travels with the deportee and immigration guards to their destination, usually giving more doses along the way. And to recruit these medical escorts, the government has sought to glamorize the work, placing ads saying, "Do you ever dream of escaping to exotic, exciting locations?" said an item in an agency newsletter. "Want to get away from the office, but are strapped for cash? Make your dreams come true by signing up as a medical escort for DIHS." How can anybody in this administration ever say anything about human rights violations in China, Myanmar, or any place else on this planet when we are guilty of doing things like this? How can we? How can our government? Oh my God. It sickens me. How many times have I said that lately? It sickens me. It does. To know that our government is doing things like that. I don't know. I keep thinking it's a bad dream.
But we drug them
and we ditch them. And supposedly nobody was the wiser, but now it's leaked out, and who gives a damn? 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. somebody asked for this, so I'm going to play it again off the well-known TV show. About says it all, I think.
When the weapons of mass destruction thing turned out not to be true, I expected the American people to rise up. They didn't. Then, when the Abu Ghraib torture thing surfaced, and it was revealed that our government participated in rendition, a practice where we kidnap people and turn them over to regimes who specialize in torture, I was sure then the American people would be heard from. We stood mute. Then came the news that we jailed thousands of so-called terrorist suspects, locked them up without the right to a trial or even the right to confront their accusers. Certainly, we would never stand for that. We did. And now it's been discovered the executive branch has been conducting massive illegal domestic surveillance on its own citizens, you and me. And I at least consoled myself that finally, the American people will have had enough. Evidently, we haven't. In fact, if the people of this country have spoken the messages, we're okay with it all. Torture, warrantless search and seizures, illegal wiretappings, prison without a fair trial, or any trial, war on false pretenses. We as a citizenry are apparently not offended. There are no demonstrations on college campuses. In fact, there's no clear indication that young people even seem to notice. Well, Melissa Hughes noticed. Now, you might think, instead of withholding her taxes, she could have protested the old-fashioned way, made a placard and demonstrated at a presidential or vice presidential appearance. But we've lost the right to that as well. The Secret Service can now declare free speech zones to contain, control, and in effect, criminalize protest. Stop for a second and try to fathom that. At a presidential rally, parade, or appearance, if you have on a supportive t-shirt, you can be there. If you're wearing or carrying something in protest, you can be removed. This in the United States of America. This in the United States of America. Is Melissa Hughes the only one embarrassed? I'm most sick and tired of it is how every time somebody disagrees with how the government is running things, he or she is labeled un-American.
Evidently, it's speech time.
And speech in this country is free, you hack. Free for me, free for you, free for Melissa Hughes to stand up to her government and say, stick it.
Objection.
I object to government abusing its power to squash the constitutional freedoms of its citizenry. And God forbid anybody challenge it. They're smeared as being a heretic. Melissa Hughes is an American. Melissa Hughes is an American. Melissa Hughes is an American. Last night, I went to bed with a book, but the book contained a speech by Adlai Stevenson. The year was 1952. He said, "The tragedy of our day is the climate of fear in which we live, and fear breeds repression. Too often, sinister threats to the Bill of Rights, to freedom of the mind, are concealed under the patriotic cloak of anti-communism. Today, it's the cloak of anti-terrorism." Stevenson also remarked, "It's far easier to fight for principles than to live up to them."
I am more determined than ever to carry on this campaign. Neither of us has the total delegates it takes to win. And both Senator Obama and I believe that the delegates from Florida and Michigan should be seated. The bottom line is this. The White House is won in the swing states, and I am winning the swing states.
His only answer to the problems created by George Bush's policies is give them another 4 years to fail. Just look at where he stands, and you'll see that a vote for John McCain is a vote for George Bush's third term. Four more years of Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans who don't need them and weren't even asking for them. Four more years of a health care plan that works for the healthy and the wealthy, but doesn't work for ordinary Americans who are struggling with rising costs.
Ask Warren Buffett if the rich really need another tax cut, if they need it extended. Ask Warren Buffett that, one of the richest men in the world. Ask him if he needs a tax cut. Ask him if he deserves a tax cut. Ask him if he doesn't pay less taxes as a percentage of his income than does his secretary. Ask Warren Buffett, one of the most respected entrepreneurs in the entire world. Ask him. Ask him if he needs a tax cut. I can think of a lot of people that do need tax cuts or some way to extend their income a little bit by a few dollars. People that can no longer afford to fill up their cars at the gas station. People that are cutting down on grocery consumption. People that are cutting down on the quality of food they eat. People that are cutting down on entertainment. People that are cutting down on clothes that they need to buy for their kids for school. People that need to buy nourishing good food for their children that cannot. They're feeding them macaroni and cheese and the cheapest possible food every day, starches. I can think of a lot of people that need a few dollars extra every week. But I can't think of one who's a billionaire, multimillionaire, somebody making $300,000-$400,000 a year that needs a tax cut. Can't think of one. And yet that's all we hear. That's what McCain's going to run on, is he's going to run on the military, about how they protect all of us. Fear, he's going to run on fear, and he's going to run on tax cuts. Tax cuts and fear. That's what's done it for the Republicans for the past two elections. And they figure it'll work again. And why not? It worked twice. It worked twice, and why shouldn't it work again? After all, pretty much the same people voting. And all we have to do is get out there on TV and convince these people once again that we're protecting them, and we'll raise the terrorist threat level up to orange or whatever it is, to the highest level once again. That's all we need to do. And that we'll give a tax cut. Never mind that the tax cut that tax cuts they gave did nothing for the economy. There's nothing to show whatsoever that revenues were increased. Oh yes, there's a surge initially in the short run, in the long run. Over a couple of years or so, the tax cuts do nothing for the U.S. economy. It does nothing except pad the bank accounts of the rich that they get, they'd get them. Tax cuts of the average man were absolutely insignificant. And yet we're fighting a $2 billion a week war and borrowing the money to do it. Sending out rebate checks to everybody that we'll end up paying interest on. We'll end up paying the principal back and the interest on it. Or our children will. And yet, these Republicans are going to run on fear and their economic prowess once again, cutting taxes. One wonders how far they would cut taxes if they had the chance. Would they cut them down to nothing? I think they would. For the rich, anyway. Someone's got to pay the bills, and you know who that'll be. It'll always be the working stiff here in this country. You can come up with all the figures you want to about these people pay this amount of tax, blah, 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 blah. When it comes right down to it, the working stiff pays the bills in this country. Always have. Always will. Well, I want to thank you for joining us here on the program today. I appreciate it very much. I do want you to remember this is a listener-supported program. We always appreciate your help with the program very, very much. I want to thank our friend Stuart and Evelyn and Eunice and who else? New contributors. Well, Stuart's not a new contributor to the program. I want to thank everybody that regularly contributes to the program, or maybe even once in a while. We appreciate all of it. Every little bit helps. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, the only true liberal network that there is. Thanks to Billy Shears, our music director. And don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang. Stay tuned for Mark Levine.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The State of Israel is 60 years old today, which, of course, prompted Saturday Night Live to say that in 5 years, Israel can move to Florida. And perhaps that would be a safer place for the Jewish state than the land of Judea, from which Jews get their name. But it is true that 60 years ago, on this day, on May 14, 1948, in a very small convention hall in Tel Aviv, and I've been there, David Ben-Gurion declared the creation, or really the reemergence, I should say, of the Jewish state. Now, he had to hide. It was interesting. I went to that museum there, and they had to let the location be known only at the very last minute. He had feared, of course, attack, not so much by the Arabs, though they certainly feared that attack, but more so by the British, who would certainly have arrested David Ben-Gurion for treason. A lot of people forget that the Israeli War of Independence in 1948 was in many ways as much against the British as it was against the Arabs. The British refused to implement the United Nations resolution of November 29, 1947, the one that divided the Western Palestinian lands, then called Palestine, into a Jewish and an Arab state. Even though the majority of the world had voted for it, the Arab states had voted against it, including Britain's client state called Transjordan, the state created in the eastern portion of Palestine, that east of the Jordan River. And Britain wanted to support its client state. It had very much installed the king at the time, King Abdullah, after he was kicked out of a Saudi Arabia. See, Britain had planned to establish the two brothers, the two Hashemite brothers, and as kingdoms in Iraq and Saudi Arabia for them helping Britain in World War I against the Turks. You may have seen some of those travails in the movie Lawrence of Arabia. And so they wanted very much to help their client state, Transjordan, invade and take over. No one seemed to think the Jewish state would last. So Britain, contrary to international law, was not implementing the new Jewish state, and, well, the Jews were fighting to survive. So there he was, David Ben-Gurion, in a very small land in Tel Aviv, declaring the reemergence of the Jewish state, saying that the inhabitants would be respected no matter what their religion, no matter what their peoplehood, and practically begging the Arab states for peace. Of course, the next day, Israel was invaded by 7 Arab nations. That event happened 60 years ago, and today Israel is certainly a vibrant democracy. It is far from perfect. It has lived in hostility its entire existence. There is, of course, the entire question of the Arab refugees that occurred in the war of 1948 and 49. And I want to discuss all of those things. Palestinians call that event the Nakba.